Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome into another edition of the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. I'm your host, Neil McCready. Today on the show, Larry Holder of the New Orleans Times-Picayune. He joins us. He's also the co-host of the Duncan Holder Show on New Orleans Radio. You can hear that. I was actually on their show on Thursday. So I recorded this conversation with Larry earlier in the week. You'll get it today. We're going to talk about Ed Orgeron, LSU, heading to Oxford this weekend for LSU at Ole Miss. Also, a lot of NFL talk. Saints, Drew Brees, the Saints running game, the Saints defense. Is it better than the numbers indicate? Can the Saints keep up this particular path? Is this a playoff team? Speaking of playoff teams, is there a great team in the NFL? Who's the best team in the NFC South? We touch all those subjects and more. Larry Holder, we'll get to that in just a minute. First, let me tell you about the Oxford Crystal. It's right next door to the Oxford Exxon. You can fill up at the Oxford Exxon, and then you can grab 49-cent wings all weekend at the Oxford Crystal, Highway 6 West in Oxford. 49-cent wings. You're going into the Grove. The game's not till 6:15. You're looking to get some catering for your party. Grab a bunch of wings. That'll do it. Get you all the way to game time. They'll have them after the game Saturday night. And then on Sunday, if you're heading out, heading back home and you want to grab some on your way, or if you live around here and you're recovering some and planning to enjoy an NFL Sunday, 49-cent wings, in addition to all the other great stuff, the 5 for 5, the pumpkin spice hot chocolate, pumpkin spice coffee, it's all there at the Oxford Crystal. We're also coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900 is the number. You call that number. You tell Corey Clark what new Ford you're looking for. He'll get you a quote within 15 minutes. There's no haggling. It's right to the bottom line. You can shop around if you want. I can tell you that's going to be your best deal, and you can let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many other listeners to our family of podcasts, and that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience, make the deal even better. At the end of the deal, tell Corey, hey, man, I heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. You can mention, obviously, the Beer Garden. You can mention the Oxford Exxon podcast. You can mention the Soft Verbal podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. All of the above, $500 off your bottom line from Clark Ford in Amory. Podcast brought to you by LB's Meat Market in Oxford, 2008 University Avenue. The number is 662-259-2999. Call Greg Jones. Tell Greg what you want. He'll have it ready for you. Go in, get those bone-in ribeyes. They're fantastic. Their fillets are great. It's different than what you get at the regular grocery store. It's just a better cut of meat. It's they'll cut it for your size. They have some prepackaged stuff, but they'll cut whatever you want. Great sausages. I love the chicken jalapeno. I love the ribeye sausage. Can't beat it at LB's, 2008 University Avenue in Oxford. It's right across from Kroger. Pork, chicken, it's all there. They cater daily, lunch specials, and then look for the LB's Meat Market food truck this weekend. You don't want chicken on a stick. You don't want a corn dog. You can get a lot better than that. Look for the LB's food truck. You'll be glad that you did. The podcast is also brought to you by Community Mortgage. Community Mortgage located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. It's 30 years old this year. It's one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All the underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You're getting local underwriting that understands your market. It's the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. Ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float-down option. Allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. It's Jlowe at communitymtg.com. Podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you're a business owner with a high-ticket product or service, HVAC, dentist, surgeon, flooring, furniture, etc., Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders, one very easy online application, rates as low as 4.9%, terms that extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, credit scores down to 580. They will get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben Brown, 443-935-5013. Ben's waiving the setup fee for Oxford Crystal Beer Garden listeners. That's a $500 savings, so call him today. We're also brought to you by Strategic Partners in Media. It's a full-service advertising and PR firm doing business throughout the country with companies of all sizes, from Fortune 500 companies to local startups, because the logic is simple. They find a way to tell a story about their client that captivates an audience that eventually does business with the client, whether that's creating and implementing an aggressive digital and social media plan, producing a captivating television advertisement, or crafting a corporate communications plan to get any business through good or bad times. SPM always finds the right path forward. It's Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. All right, now let's go to Larry Holder. Talk some LSU Ole Miss, some Ed Orgeron, a lot of New Orleans Saints, a lot of NFL as well, here on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. All right, Larry, thanks so much for being with us. I'm going to start with Ed Orgeron and LSU, and then I'm mostly going to get to the Saints and the NFL, because we talk so much on our other podcast about Ole Miss and LSU, but you have a perspective on that from being down there that I would be remiss if I didn't at least sort of get a little bit. LSU's won a couple in a row. Before that, everyone was sort of jumping off the bridge into the river. They beat Florida. They beat Auburn. Is everybody back on the Ed Orgeron train? Are things stable there now, or is it still 1 week at a time?
I don't think it's necessarily 1 week at a time. These two wins probably bought another loss or two, honestly. But I still think that there are far many LSU fans that feel like Orgeron just wasn't the guy for the job. And I don't know, look, outside of winning an SEC title, maybe that can change it. But I still think that you saw 3 weeks of just listless play when you combine Mississippi State, Syracuse, and then Troy. And look, even though they beat Florida, people weren't totally bought back in. It's like, okay, well, at least they somehow rebounded. Now they went and beat Auburn, but the first half of that Auburn game, they looked clueless. And then they come out in the second half and look like they got it together. So obviously got to give him and his staff some credit, but I still think there's always going to be, and I still think rightfully so, a faction of people, and maybe more than a faction of people, maybe the majority of people, that feel like Orgeron should not have been the guy that was hired at LSU, and that they did a crappy search, and that Joe Oliva should be gone, and the heat's going to be on, because they, you know, if they would have, if the record would have been different, as in like they go 5-0 and then lose to Florida and then lose to Auburn and they were close games, I don't think the heat would be on him. But the fact that they just played uninspired for 3 weeks and are starting to turn it around a little bit here, I think that's why there's so much hellfire and brimstone still surrounding Oliva and Orgeron.
You know, I was covering Ole Miss and Vanderbilt. They kicked off at the same time as LSU-Auburn. So I had LSU-Auburn on my computer screen, and I was watching primarily Ole Miss and Vanderbilt because that was the game I was going to have to write about. But I was watching, it's 20-0 Auburn, and I'm thinking, man, this is going to be a train wreck of a program coming in here next week. Like you said, to LSU's credit, they came back and won the game. You have to talk about it all week, so I'm sure you kept an eye on it. It felt fluky to me, and I'm not taking anything away from LSU. I thought they made a nice defensive adjustment. The punt return was huge. That kid can really run. But it felt fluky. It felt like, wow, that was an escape. Did you feel the same way?
I don't know if it was necessarily fluky. I do feel like that they went to some of their strengths, and that's us on offense. They ran a lot of motion, and look, they were able to get the big punt return out of DJ Chark. And look, without that, you're probably not in good shape. And look, they had some question marks at kicker, and Connor Culp all of a sudden comes up and makes two clutch kicks. And even Orgeron after the game was like, well, I felt like he was going to do it. Like, he didn't have a ton of confidence in him. So I guess maybe you could say it was fluky, but you also got to Auburn did it to themselves. Look, they went away from Kerryon Johnson, and you're wondering what the heck happened. Why would they do that? And you know, so it's something that I don't think LSU was expected to win. Look, they were a huge underdog at home, and that never happens. So the fact that they won is still pretty impressive. But it is like they're getting these wins, boy, skin of their teeth, and you just wouldn't expect that from LSU, even though, look, Florida and Auburn, you hear the name and you think, wow, those are going to be tough games. And yet, you know, LSU still got through them. So I still think that's why the jury's still out. It's not like they went in and, boy, they just played great in those two games. They didn't. And, boy, they played great in those other three games where they went 1-2. No, not even close. So I just think the sense around LSU is, boy, they might get some wins, but even each week, you still can't feel like, boy, there's no doubt they're going to go win that game. That feeling doesn't exist anymore with LSU, at least right now.
So they come to Oxford on Saturday to play Ole Miss. Is the Ed Orgeron back to Ole Miss thing, is it as big of a story there as maybe it would have been several years ago? It's been a decade.
I don't think so. It's one thing maybe if they were on a roll and winning, but that storyline that Orgeron is struggling so much and trying to get it back together, I think it's kind of deflated that story, at least in my eyes. Now, you know, he's asked about it, and I think one of the things was, oh, the only thing he misses was chicken on a stick, and he's not thinking about that because the whole time he was at Ole Miss, he was wishing he was at LSU, you know, whatever. But yeah, I think that the ghost of Ole Miss hovers over Orgeron just because, and that's part of the wildfire around him, because he's not a proven head coach, and of course it stems back to that. So I don't think the return in and of itself is some massive deal, at least in my eyes. Now it could be, and people might be screaming about it, but yeah, I just think the other storyline of just the LSU program basically supersedes any of those storylines.
You like chicken on a stick?
I had it once, and it's basically a chicken tender on a stick. I mean,
that's
what's the point?
I know.
What's the point of a stick? What if I choke on the stick? I'd rather choke on the chicken than choke on the stick.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to belittle chicken on a stick because it's a chicken tender, and if you've had a few pops, it's really good at 1 a.m. I just don't – I never understood why the stick made it so magical.
Well, that's like eating a Lucky Dog on Bourbon Street around 1 a.m. That's when you eat those bad boys. Don't eat those sober because, A, you don't know where the worker's been, and, B, you don't know where the hot dog and chili's been. So it's all relative here.
You just don't care if you've had too many.
Exactly. You just need to get something in your stomach, and you may barf that up too. You never know.
Well, that's a good point. All right, let's switch to the Saints because I'm curious. 3-2, really efficient on offense right now. Drew Brees, I know this is shocking, has been a very efficient quarterback. They're I think 26th in the NFL in defense, but they're creating a lot of turnovers. Is this sustainable?
I think it is, and I'm just going to say I think it is. Look, they haven't been above 500 since 2013. That means they haven't been 1-0. They haven't been 6-5. They've reached 4-4 and crumbled the past 3 years. And the fact that they are 3-2 and it's this early in the season, I think is a good sign for this team. And you mentioned that Drew Brees has been efficient. And I think that's the best way to put it. They're not having to climb on his back, and he's having to bring them to wins. And I think that's a good thing. Look, the running game, they dumped Adrian Peterson. They didn't need him. They never needed to sign him. Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara have been dynamite together, and I think that's a big plus. And you mentioned defensively. Look, the numbers are deceiving defensively because they looked awful the first 2 weeks. And now, these last 3 weeks, they have been borderline incredible. And it's, you know, it's one thing if they did it one week at Carolina. It's another thing if they backed it up with another week against Jay Cutler and the Dolphins London. But it's 3 weeks in a row now. And they've really found their niche, blitzing the quarterback. They have been outstanding blitzing the quarterback, so much so that you look at the quarterback ratings for the three quarterbacks these last 3 weeks combined, the QB rating is at 40. That's not good. I mean, one touchdown allowed, five picks, seven sacks. They have battered and bruised quarterbacks, and it's like the Greg Williams days where they're just throwing blitzes, and this time at least they've got people who can – they're starting to figure out that can cover on the back end, and that we haven't seen that in quite a while. And so the yardage may be high, but here's the thing. Scoring defense, it's going to be deceptive because, look, the Saints gave up 38 points against the Lions, but one of them was on a Drew Brees pick six. One of them was on a punt return, and so that's not on the defense. And, by the way, the defense scored three times against Detroit. That's never happened in Saints history. And the last time that's happened in the NFL was in 2011. So it's, I think this Saints defense, are they going to be perfect all the time? No. But I do think that this thing is sustainable. And you look at the schedule that the Saints have, they go to Green Bay, no Aaron Rodgers. They're home against Chicago, rookie quarterback. They go against Tampa, who's who knows what they are. Then they go to Buffalo. I mean, they're still Buffalo. Look, their schedule is friendly. And so the Saints, I'm not going to say they're for real or they're a dominant team, but they're the best team, Saints team, I've seen since 2013.
If I had told you before the season that the Saints would go to Lambeau as a six-point favorite, you would have immediately said, so something happened to Rodgers, right?
No question about it. Or, yeah, who knows? Like, or the whole entire defensive front for their team is gone, or they got lost on the bus to the way to the stadium. I'd have never thought that. And that's and Cam Jordan yesterday on Monday was asked, do you feel like you're being cheated by not playing Aaron Rodgers? And Cam Jordan looks and says just like this, no. He's like, are you kidding me? No, they want to win the game. Of course not. So, yeah, I would have never thought that going into the season.
A big part of football is catching breaks. I mean, you're not wishing any ill will on Aaron Rodgers. I saw where I was told R.J. Bell said, I haven't heard it yet, that if Rodgers were playing – Green Bay would be a 4 to 5 point favorite. And with Rodgers out, Green Bay's a 6 point dog. Says from an odds making standpoint, makes him the most valuable player in NFL history.
Wow. I've heard the spreads because I've seen some other gambling sites and numbers and says as much. But yeah, look, it's I think the Packers over under on wins this year has now dropped to 8.5. I mean, he's and they were, I think, behind only New England as the favorite to win the Super Bowl, and that's dropped significantly without Rodgers. So yeah, he's tremendous, and he's having a tremendous season already. So he was already doing Aaron Rodgers things, and so look, the Saints are certainly catching them at a break because after the bye week, I figured, all right, if the Saints can get through the stretch 1-1 and be 3-3 after their first six games, they could be in good shape. Well, now it's lining up, boy. If they don't go to Lambeau and win, that's a bad loss. And yeah, you would have never said that ever, probably in 1,000 years.
Okay, let's talk about the NFC South a little bit. Well, first I want to ask about Mark Ingram. What is it about him this year that's letting – is it the combination with Kamara? Is it something different up front? I mean, they're running the ball more effectively. He's having a really good year.
He started this last year. Look, he had his first 1,000-yard season, and he averaged 5.1 yards a carry last year. And he didn't – look, he carried it 205 times per se. Look, I just feel like he's healthy. He's kind of He's kind of learned almost the hard way. He's had to fight through some platoons and some injuries and kind of some issues fumbling the ball. And I feel like he's probably the most complete player he's been since he's been in the NFL. And you do it because look, he carried the ball 25 times last game. He hasn't done that very often with the Saints. No, neither has any back really for the Saints carried it 25 times a game in the Sean Payton era. I just think that he's comfortable with what they're running. They know he's their number one back, but with you add Kamara, look, you could put both of those guys in the game at the same time, and teams don't know. And that's why the whole Adrian Peterson thing, the fastest they could get him out of town, the better. I mean, they just didn't need him, and he doesn't fit with what they do because Peterson's not versatile. Look, Ingram can catch the ball and run the ball. Kamara can do the same thing. And I just think that he's got a full knowledge of what they expect out of him now. And he was, like I said, this is a second year coming for him. And he ran like a guy who felt even more relaxed last week, just because he didn't have to worry about Adrian Peterson looking over his back or complaining or whatever. I mean, he's the guy. Kamara you can use in some different circumstances, but I think a 1-2 punch with those two guys gives the Saints some diversity on offense they haven't had in a few years, since maybe when you had Sproles and Pierre Thomas kind of at the peak of their careers.
NFC South, it might not be the best division in football, but it's pretty consistent. There's just not a bad team in it right now, is there?
Yeah, I wouldn't say – well, it's hard to say who's the best anything. This NFL season, there's no dominant team.
Yeah, that's
there's
what no I dominant. Ask you. Is there any team that you would even remotely classify as great?
No, I would not. No. New England's down. Look, the Packers are going to fall off the map. I would say the NFC South, you're going to, A, have the most competitive division because some – you know, those teams – I feel like they can catch fire on a day and then kind of drift off on a day. And it's going to be as wide open and interesting as any division in the NFL. And I don't think they're going away. Like the AFC East, it's competitive, but that's because New England's down and the Jets are going to fall off and Buffalo's going to fall. I mean, and then look, Jay Cutler, give me a break. You know, you've seen some of these divisions and they're bogus. But this one, Atlanta's falling back down to earth. I mean, look, you can't lose at home to Jay Cutler and you're up 17 points. That's absurd. And so I think maybe they're having a little bit of hangover. Carolina, I don't know what team you're going to get each week. The Saints pummel them. Then they go out and beat New England and they – they go out and beat Detroit, and then they stink again, against the Eagles. And the Eagles are 5-1, but, yeah, that's who knows if they're for real. But, yeah, and then you have Tampa. Sometimes they're okay, sometimes they're not. And and Saints are starting to kind of catch some fire. So it's wide open. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
What have you thought of – you mentioned the Panthers. Cam Newton's played a lot better the last couple of weeks. It's kind of looked like the Cam of the Super Bowl year a little bit after last year when they had a really disappointing season. Is it just a couple of games, or do you think they've recaptured something there?
Well, Cam Newton looked like a hot mess against the Saints. Then he bounces back and plays well against Patriots and plays well against the Lions, and then he looks like a mess again against Philadelphia. Yeah. So I don't know what it is. I know their offensive line isn't the best right now. They're without Greg Olsen. That hurts. I still think they're trying to figure out Christian McCaffrey, because I think he can be a mega weapon for them. But yeah, I still think that Cam Newton, there's some things that he hasn't been right since the Super Bowl year. And I think that's he's not the consistent same guy. And, you get some pressure on him and it flushes him. I can tell you, the Saints did that, and Cam was not looking good at all, and so he's still kind of enigmatic, and I'm curious to see if he can turn it on or if it kind of falls off, because Saints got to play Carolina one more time this year, and they play them in the dome, and it's they got that's a team they're going to have to contend with. I mean, there's no doubt about that. So yeah, but I think Cam, he's still not the same guy that he was that MVP season.
You have a theory on why there's no two or three dominant teams like there usually are, and then along those lines is, I mean, everyone talks about the power of parity. The parity makes it interesting. Is it more interesting when there's no dominant team, or does it lose some sex appeal?
I think it loses some sex appeal at this point in the season and in the middle of the season, but teams tend to elevate by the end. And I'll just go back to, say, when the Saints, when they won the Super Bowl, they were, I know the Colts people figured they were more the dominant team. And then Brett Favre got the headlines that year because it was the Vikings. And so, and then Saints made their way in and eventually won it. But yeah, those were at least they had some dominant teams. Right now, even though Kansas City is 5-1, the Eagles are 5-1, people don't trust them yet. And it's like Kansas City, yeah, that's not a market that's going to appeal much. Philadelphia, I could see that. But still, it's not, they've never won a Super Bowl. So it's I think that right now it's kind of like, I don't know what to think. And some people might find it interesting. Now, usually when you see New England, they're not New England this year. And I do think that people like to see a dominant team. But that's not the case. And I'm curious to see how they bounce back, because at some point they're going to have to fall off. And their defense has certainly fallen off. And that's on Belichick. And that's, I'm curious. That's more of a storyline than, say, them being dominant now. But it's definitely parity, and because you don't have these familiar names, like Dallas isn't a dominant team like they were last year, and you don't have these familiar teams that are atop the mountain right now, I think that has people wondering, I don't know who's for real, actually.
What do you think about New England? Do you think it's over, or do you think there's a chance that they recapture this, and that they don't look at all like the New England of the last few years?
I'm not sure if they recapture it. I thought Brandon Cooks would be more of an addition for them, and he just hasn't been. And you lose Julian Edelman, that hurts you. There's no doubt about that, because now the focus solely goes on Cooks as far as the receiving core. And on defense, they could usually just plug and play, and it hasn't been the case. They traded for Coney Ealy. They thought he would be their starter defensive end. They cut him before the season starts. I don't think they've got a pass rush. Look, they traded away Chandler Jones a couple of years ago and thought they'd get value there. It didn't work. Stephon Gilmore, they paid a ton of money for, and he hasn't been the player. And look, Malcolm Butler, look, the Saints were trying to trade for him, and I'm sure they're probably pretty glad they didn't at this point, because he's kind of had their struggles. And so I think maybe at some point their system of doing things was gonna catch up to them, and I think maybe at right now it's starting to. Am I gonna like stay on the tank? No, because as long as Tom Brady there, I'm never gonna say they're not a contender to win the Super Bowl. But yeah, I think it might have finally caught up to them at this rate.
I want to talk about Breeze for just a couple of minutes, because I'm just curious what it is about him. Back when I was on the quasi beat, he was an elite NFL quarterback, and now he's playing at the same level. What is it about him that's allowed him to stay on top of his game for this late into his 30s?
Whole health, for one. He's been very fortunate with his health. He's missed one game being injured his entire Saints career. And so that's been a big thing. I think a master of the command of the offense. I mean, he knows this offense. They've never had a change in offensive coordinators. I take that back. Technically they have, because Doug Marrone was his original offensive coordinator. Now it's Pete Carmichael, but that was for 2.5 years. And we all know Sean Payton is really the offensive coordinator, so there's never been a change there. And I just think that he, of course, we all know his physical stature, but he knows the ins and outs of everything. And physically, he can still throw it. People question his arm strength, yada, yada. He can still throw it, and he can have still have pinpoint accuracy. And I think that the weapons that come to New Orleans, they're never really household names, but they buy into what he's doing, and they get, if they don't get on the page with him, they're out. And so it's pretty incredible that he's never had a Pro Bowl wide receiver. He's had a Pro Bowl tight end. Mark Ingram's been to a Pro Bowl a couple times. But he has never had a Pro Bowl wide receiver once. Marcus Colston never made a Pro Bowl. Michael Thomas, maybe he makes one. He doesn't have the numbers this year, but it's just incredible that he's still able to do this with this at this level for this long. And to me, it doesn't look like he's slowing down. I mean, he turns 39 in January, and he's just one of those freaks, and it would get more pub if Tom Brady wasn't an even bigger freak. It's going to be a bizarre day when I've got to watch Saints football and cover practice and see balls just going all over the place, being like, what the hell's going on at quarterback when Drew Brees is gone? Because you take it for granted how good he is. And I think that happens in the NFL. It's taken for granted. Oh, Drew Brees, 5,000 yards, 38 touchdowns, 70% completion percentage, blah, blah, blah. Whatever, that's Drew Brees. It's amazing the bar that he set for himself.
NFL players and owners met today to talk social issues and all of that stuff. Was it a meeting just so everybody could feel like they had a voice, or are they going to get this thing resolved where it's no longer kind of hanging over every week leading into Sunday?
I'm curious to see what happens there, because not every team was represented in that meeting. Both on the players and on the owner's side. There was kind of like some cherry pick, like as far as local ties down here. Eric Reed, who went to LSU, he was on there. Malcolm Jenkins, former Saints player, and Kenny Stills, former Saints player. They were among the players there. It sounds like Colin Kaepernick was invited and decided not to go, and that would probably not look good since he's suing the NFL for collusion. Is that so? It probably wouldn't be good for him to do that, but at least in his eyes, I don't know. But I don't know what's going to come about of it. I don't think there's going to be policy change, say, right this second. I think they're trying to get on the same page to where. Because, look, I'll just tell you, the incident happened at the Saints game this past weekend where the players knelt. It was before the national anthem was playing. And at the same exact time, and I could tell you the players and coaches didn't realize it was going to happen, the PA asked for a moment of silence for a fallen NOPD officer, Marcus McNeil.
I read about this, yeah.
The fans are booing during the moment of silence, and it's this ugly scene, and it was just a bad look. And no one was trying to disrespect the officer. I don't think the fans were. I don't think the players were. But that look in and of itself, where it's like, what is all this happening for? I think the NFL needs to get this thing corrected. I don't know how far they're going to get. I'm curious as you, because I'm not up there. I'm curious to where this thing goes, because I think it's just hurt everything. It's hurt fandom. It's hurt the NFL. It's hurt the players. It's an overriding topic. And, oh, by the way, I mean, look, let's be honest. This would have gone away had Donald Trump not stirred the pot. It was a dying storyline. No one was paying much attention to it anymore.
It literally had no pulse. It was
right.
Over. Yeah.
It was over. And he did this to rally his base for this. That's a whole nother podcast. You and me, I'm sure, would be along the same wavelength, despite where you and me live. You know? So yeah. That's, yeah. Yeah.
Yet
so
now it feels like, I completely agree with what you said, and yet now it feels like we've hit the point in this where kind of the average guy is saying, so What are you protesting now? I understand you're upset. You have every reason to be upset because the president of the United States poked you. But where do you go now? Where is the conclusion here? Because you're right. It's not helping the league. It's certainly probably hurting the league. People point to TV ratings and stuff, but it's obvious that the league wouldn't be having it. You tell me if I'm wrong here. The league wouldn't be having a meeting today in New York on a Tuesday about this if it wasn't concerned about the impact that it's having. So what do you do now to make it sort of go back to having less of a pulse?
Yeah, I don't know. And maybe part of it is tell them to ignore the president, but what do you do? I mean, he's president of the United States of America, the supposed most powerful political position in the face of planet Earth.
And I think he'd poke the bear again if it died.
I think he would too, on purpose. And it's I don't know where you go. And it's a topic that is extreme. Look, you've got the extremes on one side and the extremes on the other, and then you got the rest of the people in the middle where it's like, okay, why do we keep talking about this? Why don't we talk about what the Saints are 3-2, this, that, the other? And it's for like say me, who's got a daily show, it's a delicate balance. And because I don't personally want to talk about it the whole time, but and I try not to, but you've got to talk about it. I mean, it's
I was going to ask you on your show with Jeff Duncan, how often does this? I know everybody's not caller driven anymore, but when you get emails, tweets, stuff like that during a show when people do call in, how much of a topic is it?
You know, it became a big topic when the Saints did it. It was never a topic before. It was never a topic before because the Saints had never done the protest. And then when they did in Carolina, it became a topic. And so because you want to get player reaction, why they're doing it and such, and then it became a topic again. But when we took calls on it, and we don't talk about it every day, and so it's it kind of drifts back to sports for us. But people at least came with reasonable arguments for both sides, and you allowed both sides to talk, and then that's what you do, and then you just kind of moved on. And I do think people call into our show or listen to our show. They want to hear the scope because myself and Jeff, we are Times-Picayune columnists. I mean, so we do broach these topics at sometimes. But yeah, it's something like, I'll put it to you this way: we talked about the incident in the Superdome, and we talked about it for one segment. We spelled out what we thought about it, and then we moved on, and that was kind of a wrap, because I just don't know where you go from here. And it's, we can bang our head against the wall, and if we want to just have all day every day talk about it, I'm sure we could, but that's not what I want to do. And I'm willing to bet the majority of NFL fans, they would like to move past it and just have football. It's not because they have a issue with what's going on in either direction. They're like, all right, let's just move on and get past this.
Yeah, I don't think there's much doubt. Well, listen, I've kept you long enough. I really appreciate your time, your patience earlier in the hour when we were trying to connect, and I look forward to talking to you soon, and enjoy the trip to Wisconsin to Lambeau. It's one of my favorite places to go to a game.
You got it. And when you get me on a roll, Neil, this ain't my first rodeo with you. You get me on a roll, we just keep going, man. That's just how we do it.
That's fun. Exactly. It's a fascinating topic. It's like you said, it's one that we're probably on the exact same page. I've listened to both sides of it enough to be able to probably debate either side.
Right.
I still can't believe that it's become what it's become, and it feels to me at this point like no one inside the NFL knows exactly how to stop, and yet I think if they do stop, and I thought when Pence did the deal in Indianapolis, that was them kicking the hornet's nest again. It was, we're gonna make it go, we're gonna keep this going because it rallies a base. And I thought, oh, my God, it's never going to stop. And because it just, you spin it again. It's like, you know, you spin a top and it finally slows down, and it's like someone grabbed it again and spun it, and now it's just spinning fast. And I don't know that the league, I'm normally really critical of Goodell, and I'd like to criticize him here, but I keep thinking if I were in his shoes, I really don't know what I would do either.
Right. And Pence pulls off, when the day they honor Peyton Manning and they erect a statue in front of him, in front of Lucas Oil Stadium, the day should have been about him honoring one of the best players to ever play the game, and that was the story because of just what you said. I mean, it's just obnoxious.
Yeah, that was the day that it got obnoxious. I mean, it was obnoxious the first time, but that was the day that it kind of felt like it was starting to get under control, because we live in a news cycle where people get tired of a story. If a story starts to, you know, peter out, we tend to kind of move on to the next story. We don't keep it going much, and that started it again, and it was obviously intentional. And so now you've got the league going again, and players don't want to look like they're losing here, and I understand that. And yet at the same time, I think players are saying, hey, I do want to play football. I do want to focus on football. Ownership is obviously saying, I don't want to lose money. We're in this to make money. I don't want to lose money. I want to make money. Can we please make this go away? And it just – it's one of the very few times that I've kind of felt sorry for Goodell, because I don't know what – there's just no way really to make everyone happy here.
Well, and I do think that some owners feel one way and some owners feel a different way.
Sure.
And this is not – an owners in unison kind of thing. And I think that's why you kind of had a diverse group of owners at this meeting with the players. And by the way, this was a regularly scheduled NFL owners meeting, but they made this part of the meetings because of this topic.
And good for them. Cause they needed to hear that perspective and be
right.
able to have an understanding at the table. And I think you have to commend the owners that were there that listened.
Right, exactly. But the one of the owners that was not invited to the players and NFLPA and NFL meeting for this particular topic was Jerry Jones. He was not invited to the meeting or did not attend. I don't know if he was not invited, but he was not on the list that attended of, like, say, the 10 owners that were involved. And so it's and Jerry Richardson from Carolina just refused to even go to these owners' meetings, saying that, I don't want to be involved, because he was the one who didn't – he had the conflict with the players afterward because he didn't put out a statement, and he was the only one who did not necessarily have their backs.
By the way, Colin Kaepernick's attorney, Mark Garagos, issued a statement, I think, as we were talking. He said that Colin Kaepernick was not invited to attend Tuesday's meeting by any official from the NFL or any other – team executive. Other players wanted him present and have asked that he attend the next meeting with the goal of forging a lasting and faithful consensus around these issues. Mr. Kaepernick is open to future participation on these important discussions, end quote. So that clears that up a little bit, probably.
Or maybe not. Who knows?
Well, hey, who knows? Man, I look forward to talking to you. Thanks for the time, and we'll visit again soon.
There you go, Neil. Appreciate it, buddy.
Right.
See ya.
Thanks, Larry. Bye. Our thanks to Larry for his time. Hope you enjoyed that. I've always said this. I'm a Louisiana guy. I always feel bad jumping on the Saints bandwagon because when I was a kid, they were awful, and I just never really did it. But that's kind of the team that I like to watch. It's kind of the team that I catch myself cheering for. I just feel guilty. It's a weird thing. I don't know how to describe it. NFC South's going to be fun. There's not a bad team in the division. Potentially two or three good ones, no bad one, a lot of fun. And now that Rodgers is out, Green Bay, NFC's up for grabs completely. So as we get into week seven, I guess, of the NFL season, things are pretty interesting. Hope you enjoyed that interview with Larry. The podcast is also brought to you by Captain John Fryer and Tuna Chaser Charters in Biloxi, Mississippi. John handles inshore and offshore fishing expeditions 4 to 12 hours. He knows where to put you on the fish that you want to catch. Simple as that. It's a popular trip right now for visitors popping into Biloxi. Maybe you're in business, you don't have a full weekend, but you want to make a quick fishing trip. Try one of the inshore trips for speckled trout, for triple tail. Reach John through his website, tunachasacharters.com, his Facebook page, or you can call John 228-348-7817. Podcast also brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding area for the past 26 years. I've used Comer for AC repair. You can take my word for it. Their attention to detail, their customer service, their work, it's just second to none. Comer's an American Standard dealer, but they work on any make or model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, and preventative maintenance contracts. Go to their site, comerheatingandair.com. Check out their Facebook page. Mention you heard about them on the podcast. You get $20 off. Contact Eric at 662-934-3846 or Shane, 662-832-8749. We'll be back next week. I'll try to get a couple of these to you. Going to do a baseball World Series preview. It's the Dodgers against either the Yankees or the Astros. When I was a kid, Dodgers-Yankees was such a big thing for me that would have almost some symbolism to it. But Dodgers-Astros would be fascinating as well. The Astros better start hitting. They look offensively like the Cubs did in the National League Championship Series, and that won't work against the Dodgers and that bullpen. So we'll do that, and then hoping later in the week I'm going to have my buddy Taylor Zarzer on the show. We'll catch up on a lot of things, college football and others. And so that's the plan. So hopefully get a couple of Beer Gardens to you next week. Until then, that does it for today. Again, our thanks to Larry Holder. Our thanks to the Oxford Crystal. Don't forget those 49-cent wings. They're great. They're available all weekend, Saturday and Sunday, at the Oxford Crystal, Highway 6 West in Oxford. Until next time, take care.